There are a lot of quarterbacks in the NFL draft this year. My name is Ben Solak, and I host the Ringer NFL Draft Show with Danny Kelly, Danny Heifetz, and Greg Horlbeck. We cover trades, free agency, and the draft, which is, obviously. We'll tell you about everything, which includes which quarterbacks are good, which quarterbacks are bad, and which quarterbacks are just Kirk Cousins. That is the Ringer NFL Draft Show. Search the Ringer NFL Draft Show on Spotify.
It's the Ringer's Philly Special, presented by FanDuel. April showers bring a loaded sports calendar, and FanDuel is the place to bet on it all. Right now, you can check out the new and improved Parlay Hub. Filter by odds, sport, and bet type to easily find the most popular parlays and same-game parlays all on one page. Plus, start betting on the Explore page and the Pulse and get paid instantly when you win. So download the app today and bet with FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook. The Ringer is committed to responsible gaming. Please visit rg-help.com to learn more about the resources and helplines available and listen to the end of the episode for additional details. Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit rg-help.com.
This episode is brought to you by Cars.com. When you add your car to your garage on Cars.com, you'll unlock access to real-time insights into how much your car is worth. Plus, view its historical and projected value to decide when to sell. So when the time is right, you can secure an instant offer from a local dealership or sell it yourself on Cars.com. Start tracking your car's value with your garage on Cars.com.
Philly is a tough city. You know, they're gonna tell you why it is, and you know, I love it. I like Philadelphia because they care.
Hello and welcome to the Ringers Philly Special. It's a Sixers show. It's a postponed MLB opening day show. It's Chris Ryan and Raheem Palmer with super producer Cliff Augustine. What's up, guys?
Life is good. I can't complain. And I love that you called Cliff a super producer. Like, I haven't heard that term since like the days of the 2000s when you had like Just Blaze and Timbaland and Pharrell charging people $250,000.
Cliff is our Neptunes, man. Come on. And it's just like, Raheem, I like that you were like, life is good, I can't complain. When we got on this Zoom call, we were greeted by you going, you're a bitch, you're a bitch. I'm, of course, referring to the closing moments of last night's Sixers-Clippers game, which the Sixers lost in, I guess, like, heartbreaking, if kind of vaguely predictable fashion. It was James Harden's homecoming. We're going to talk all about that game. We're going to talk about, as we were going to into production on this pod today, we Sixers sent out a tweet that certainly would indicate that Joel Embiid is coming back. His return is imminent. So if I assume in the next couple of days, it was a picture of Joel Embiid eating an apple. I guess we can get into what that means. I have a lot of stuff to talk about with Sixers, and we can get a little fills in. Raheem, the Harden return, the Clippers last night. I guess we can start at the ending. The Sixers, you know, I mean, like, that's a game the Sixers should have won. That's a sick game, like, in a perfect world, you're like, the Sixers got to put that away. This has been such, like, a kind of weird, tough second half of the season that even when something like this happens where the refs come out and admit after the game that we blew it, I find myself emotionally, like, it's difficult for me to get, like, worked up emotionally about it because I'm just like, this is such a it-is-what-it-is season for me. What about you?
Yeah, I feel the same exact way. It's just more so frustrating because Joel Embiid was just having such a monster year. And then to lose him, and then you watch the whole thing spiral out of control. And then, you know, right now it feels like things have been stabilizing. They haven't been as bad, you know, the last couple of weeks as they were, you know, initially. But a game like that, you got to win. I mean, when you have two turnovers in the last minute of the game, it's hard for me to be mad at the refs. I'm more so mad at ourselves.
Yeah, I mean, so basically, like, there was a bunch of, like, just that kind of stuff that's starting to characterize, I think, this NBA season, and is the experience at the end of games has just become completely degraded in a lot of ways. So many replays, so many, you know, like, it obviously hit its nadir with this Warriors-Lakers game a couple weeks ago. But most people would tell you on any given night, you're just watching these, like, video reviews for 5-6 minutes taking up instead of like 2 minutes of game time. Sixers lost 108-107, and the controversial call came on this Oubre drive where Paul George fouled him. The ref said after the game that he fouled him. There was no call. Nurse blows his top. And Oubre, who I think is generally like a pretty calm guy, like on the floor, or at least pretty easygoing, Oubre loses it. And at the end of the game can be seen, and you don't need to be a lip reader, an expert lip reader at least, to see that Oubre is clearly calling each ref. He goes up to each ref and he goes, "You're a bitch, you're a bitch, you're a bitch." And then I think kind of starts talking about their mothers. Like, I think he did start invoking some family members afterwards. I really enjoyed Oubre's quote afterwards. So the Oubre quote afterward the game was, "This is an intense basketball game, of course, and we're not perfect. The refs are imperfect. I want to apologize for just losing my cool, because that's something I try to work on each and every day and try to represent God the best way I possibly can. And that wasn't it. So I just ask for forgiveness." You don't have to ask for forgiveness from the Philly special. I'll tell you that. Like, I enjoy a little bit of passion at the end of the game's dream. What did you think of Oubre's outburst at the end of the game?
I loved it. I don't think he has to ask for forgiveness from anybody from the city of Philadelphia. I think he represented us well at the end of the day. Like, that's the kind of passion that we want from our sports stars. And he gave it to us last night. So I think he indoctrinated himself perfectly.
Yeah, it was honestly like a very Philly fan performance from a Philadelphia athlete, which we usually don't see exactly. Like, it doesn't always mirror, but like, I definitely think that Kelly represented the city well in that moment. As far as the game itself, like, look, like this team, I don't think the Clippers are any great shakes right now. Like, there's some weirdness going on with that team. But at the end of the day, they have like way more talent than the Sixers have right now. They were kind of outgunned. The Sixers were up at some points, I think double digits, but like they weren't really playing with their food. I feel like the Clippers had a switch to flip and they flipped it. I want to talk a little bit about where this team finds itself. So, you know, the Sixers are 10-17 since Embiid went out at the beginning of February, and they are 13-26 without Joel this season. So I think on one hand, you could say, well, this has been a lost season. On the other hand, you could say if the Bucks lost Giannis for as much time, you know, they got Dame, so I think that they would be okay. But without Middleton, too, like they would probably be struggling. If the Nuggets lost Joker, I'm sure that's a playoff team, or I'm pretty sure that's a playoff team, but it would obviously be a huge problem for them. If the Mavs lost Luka, any of these teams that have like very heliocentric or like everything revolves around one player offenses, or and especially one like where you rely on somebody like Embiid for the defensive like capabilities that he has, this is just what's going to happen, man. You know, like we don't have three all NBA players. We've got one and a half. And you combine that with the fact that Tobias has kind of fallen off a cliff since Embiid went out, more or less. And like, this is where we're at. We're in eighth place in the Eastern Conference. We'll be probably in the play-in tournament, like barring some catastrophe. In the next nine games remaining in the season, the Sixers face Detroit, Memphis, San Antonio, and Toronto. So you hope that they can scrape out some wins there. And we'll probably find ourselves in the play-in. And I guess that's as best as you can hope for in this situation, right, Raheem?
Yeah. I mean, when you look at what this... I mean, I just... It's very disappointing because what this team was... I mean, look... Yeah,
they were the second-best team in the conference to me.
Yeah, easily. I mean, if you look at the Boston Celtics net rating, and you could probably say second-best team in the league, arguably. Well, maybe not the league because you got the Nuggets. I mean, but if you look at net rating, the Boston Celtics are plus 15.7. With Joel Embiid on the floor, the Sixers had a net rating of plus 10.3. In games without him, they're minus 5.2. So that tells you how well Joel Embiid was playing and how well this team was playing with him on the floor. I mean, they were just basically a contender. I didn't necessarily buy it. Like, I was a little bit more lukewarm than most people I spoke to. But I mean, like, I've spoken to like professional bettors who were saying, you know what, this Sixers team can legitimately win the title. And so to see them, you know, slip to this level, it is quite painful at the end of the day.
I guess, you know, what's different about this season is that the pain came earlier. You know, like, I think I'm used to stop and start seasons or seasons that seem like everything is going well, but in the back of your head, you're like, yeah, well, let's see what happens in the playoffs. And, you know, Embiid may miss 10, 15 games or whatever. But last season, I think there was like all this momentum around him going for the MVP, and you still had Harden. And there were times where the Sixers, offensively at least, looked as good as they've looked in, you know, any time like that I can remember. I mean, offensively last year, the Sixers looked as good as they've ever looked, you know, in my lifetime. And then you get into this season, and it's like Embiid is like on a tear. And even though Boston is playing like historically good levels, at historically good levels, I was just like, I really like our chances, and this is like a fun team, and I can't wait to see them in the playoffs, and I love Maxi, and I like what Nick Nurse is bringing. So for it to end prematurely, but at least get derailed prematurely, has a different psychological effect than if you get all the way into the playoffs and lose in the second round. Do you know what I mean? Like, in some ways, I'm kind of like, if it was going to happen this way, I kind of needed it to happen in a different way and not feel like, can Joel just not get over the hump in the second round, or can we never keep him healthy? I don't know how you're feeling about Joel coming back, though. I wanted to ask you about that.
So there's been different schools of thought. Like, I've heard people say, hey, Joel Embiid has never been healthy. Now he's had time off, and maybe this is a good thing. I don't necessarily buy that. It's tough for me because, like, the only comparison I can think of is Jimmy Butler back in 2018. Okay. He played with the Wolves. He tore his meniscus. He missed 17 games, played 3 regular season games to close the year. And then in a postseason, like, this was a guy who was a borderline MVP that year. In the postseason, I mean, he was pretty solid. He had, you know, almost 16 points a game. And this was on a team with Wiggins, Carl Anthony Towns, like, just a lot of people on that team. He had almost 16 points a game, 45% from the field, 47% from 3, 6 rebounds, 4 assists. So he was a solid Jimmy Butler. He wasn't, you know, 22 points a game Jimmy Butler, but he was solid. So I think if you can get, let's say, 80-85% of Joel Embiid's production, and if he comes back this weekend, he has enough time to, you know, have his conditioning right for the postseason. So I don't know if he's going to be 35 points per game Joel Embiid, but if he's 30 points per game Joel Embiid, I think this might be a good thing because he's had like almost 2 months off. Grand slams, no hitters, and double plays are back, and there's no better place to get in on the MLB action than FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook, because right now, new customers can start the MLB season with $200 in bonus bets if your first $5 bet wins. That's right. You get $200 in bonus bets if your first $5 bet wins. Me personally, I like the Tampa Bay Rays over 84.5 wins. I also like the Chicago Cubs over 83.5 wins. You can bet those two season win totals at FanDuel Sportsbook. That's $200. You can use the bet on money lines, totals, strikeouts, homers, you name it. Or combine your bets in the same game parlay for a chance at an even bigger payout. All in on an app that's safe, secure, and super easy to use. Just visit FanDuel.com/RingerPhilly to join today. Make every moment more with FanDuel, official sports betting partner of Major League Baseball. Must be 21 and up and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit theringer.com/RG. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. Bonuses issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com.
This episode is brought to you by Hotels.com. I was traveling internationally last year. I was in Mallorca. I didn't know the island well. I said, let me head to the north, head towards the water. Let me go on hotels.com and see what they have available. Something preferably on the beach, maybe even a gym. Not only did I get those things, there was a kids session with exercise, gymnastics in the water, pony rides, a train. It had everything, and I didn't even want any of those things. But at least I knew they were there, just in case I changed my mind. And now finding the perfect hotel has never been easier thanks to the Hotels.com app. Whether you're looking for a family-friendly, right, all-inclusive or a relaxing spa weekend, you can find exactly what you need and compare hotel prices, ratings, and amenities side by side. So start planning your next getaway and find your perfect somewhere in the Hotels.com app.
This episode is brought to you by Major League Baseball. A lot is going on in the world of sports right now, but don't forget the 2024 baseball season. It's officially here. Some pretty exciting things to look forward to. Can the star-studded Dodgers, can they make the World Series? Can Mookie Betts break my heart again? How about the young Orioles? How about the defending champs, the Rangers, trying to become the first back-to-back champs in over two decades? See how far they'll go. Get in on the action by visiting your local ballpark or any ballpark, or you can just go to MLB.com, tap the banner to learn more. Baseball is something else.
I don't know enough about meniscus injuries. They're like, there's so much like gray area around, like he could get it repaired and he'd miss everything, or he could rest and he can come back. But if he comes back, like at what percentage is he coming back? Then you get into things like rhythm and you get into things like familiarity with your teammates. While Joel was out, the Sixers pulled off this Buddy Hield trade. In my experience in the past, like Embiid works really well with guys who fit the Buddy Hield mold. I'm thinking specifically of Redick, but like he needs a little bit of time to create some chemistry, some timing, you know, all the dribble handoffs and like finding guys out of the double that he does that Buddy would probably be deadly at. And I think his game is actually cratered because he doesn't have anybody really who's like taking that pressure off of his shooting and stuff. Like, I don't think that that can just happen overnight. And one of the things that's interesting about the prospect of the Sixers going straight into a play-in situation is historically the Sixers aren't great in must-win situations during the Joel Embiid era. You know, I mean, they've gotten as far as the second round, but we've had some real heartbreaking ends of series in those second round series. I don't know. Do you feel like being in a play-in environment and being in a no one believes in us kind of mindset may be beneficial to this team in a weird way?
I mean, when you put it like that, when you speak about the must-win situations that the Sixers have been in, we don't necessarily have the best track record.
No, but we do not.
We do have a guy, and I mean, Kyle Lowry isn't what he was, but he is a guy who, he's a great leader. And I think he can kind of stabilize things. And, you know, as long as the Sixers stay in the eighth seed, at least we have two cracks at it. Like, I would be really nervous if we fell
if
to
we're
the
ninth or tenth. Yeah, right.
Because then it's really must win. Like you gotta you have to win two games. Whereas with this situation, you just have to win one or the other. And I think that's very possible when you look at the lineup of teams who you have to face. Now, obviously, no one wants to face the Miami Heat.
Right.
This is right. A team who just, I mean, their brand is playing possum, and then when it matters, they turn it on. And you gotta deal with playoff Jimmy.
The Heat are obviously the example of the team that I think that the Sixers, if you were looking for inspiration, you would look at last season's Heat and see play it from the play into the finals. You know, like that's an available path to NBA teams now, as crazy as it is. I mean, it used to be like, if you don't have home court in the first series of the playoffs, forget it. And now it's like, well, you can get in there from the play-in, you know?
Yeah.
And that's wild. And I don't want anything to do with the Heat in a play-in situation and the idea of Jimmy Butler's like just absolutely like tearing our heart out again in that kind of way. It would be tough, but I do think that there's something to be said for like this team finding like a little bit of spine in a back up against the wall situation, to combine my sports cliches.
Yeah, I definitely think that makes sense. I think, you know, anytime you find yourself in a situation to where every game is a playoff game down the stretch, it does. You know, you're playing at a different intensity than everybody else earlier. And I think you can build off that momentum and rhythm, and it can take you far. Or if you're just not there, then it can get you out of here quickly.
Yeah, it is actually, I suppose we could talk about Harden for a second here, because we're talking about the team that could have been, right? Like if Daryl had decided that like he's going to fully invest in this Harden Embiid nucleus with Maxey kind of developing underneath of those guys. You know, I obviously don't know what would have happened and what Harden's level of like play would have been like on this specific team. I think you could make an argument that the Sixers would have been better situated to survive the second half of the season with a James Harden-led team rather than a Maxey-led team, because Maxey's just not ready for it, and Maxey's game hasn't developed to that point where Harden is, where it's just like Harden can kind of absorb so much usage and also can like set guys up in a way that only two or three dudes in his generation can, and make reads and just like, I don't know, I could see a Harden Sixers team weathering the storm better than this version of the team did. But that being said, it comes with all the Harden headaches. And I think the Clippers, like out last night, accepted, like the Clippers are not exactly a paragon of consistency since they had that hot 25 game run there.
So I thought that initially, but when I look at Harden over the last month, Harden hasn't been good. I mean, you're talking about a guy who is, I mean, been pretty much 15 points per game. You're talking about 40% shooting, like 33% from.
Is that like the role and what's been requested of him? And is that like this, the weirdness of it, like Kawhi and PG and Powell are all healthy and playing well?
So I think if you go back to that win streak that he had where they were like, what were they, 22-5 or 25-6?
Yeah, they like tore out of, like, they were in the sort of bottom part of the Western Conference playoff race, and then they got up to first, I think, right?
Yeah. Well, they didn't get all the way up to first. They were probably like, you know, third or so.
Okay.
Because Oklahoma City was just, I mean, they've been a juggernaut all year, them in Minnesota. I think Harden was a different guy at that point. Like, I'm seeing a totally different guy the second half of the year. And I think part of it is he's getting older. And we saw this a little bit in Philly. He was a guy who is typically feast or famine.
Yeah.
Either he's going, if he's making his step back three, the game's going well for him. If he's not making that step back three, then, you know, things aren't, because he's not driving to the basket as well as he used to. So I'm not sure that's the case, to be honest with you. Like,
any feelings about his return? Like, I think that that's kind of like something that the national media really builds up, where it's like, this guy's coming back into the hornet's nest that is Philly. And it's like, I don't know, man, it's a Wednesday night. You know, like,
he was here two seasons. Got booed,
but yeah, he's here 2 years. It's not like people like were naming their kids after him.
Yeah, I mean, I liked Harden here. I think he did a good job at, you know, mentoring Maxey. He won those two games against the Celtics, but at the end of the day, he did not close out that series. Like, he didn't do enough for me to truly associate him as a Philly athlete. He just he was a mercenary, pretty much.
Cliff, what did you think?
For me, like, the mentality of Philly is always to take stuff like that super personal, because, you know, it's like rejection, right? Like, you don't want to be rejected by, you know, the ex-girlfriend or whatever. But to me, like, in a sports sense, it's just, I feel like I just became more of a business sense type of person, to where it's just like, this is just business at the end of the day, right?
Yeah.
It's like, also there's no hard feelings anymore.
Is it the element of like kind of not knowing for sure how that went down with the Harden taking the discount versus Maury's promise versus did he promise him anything? And was he right to be like, you said I was going to get maxed out and now you're hedging? Or was this really just a matter of making sure there was no tampering investigation by talking to him early? Harden after the game, he got booed. I've seen people get booed worse, but he did get booed a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Also, it was like he got booed when he missed a free throw, so it wasn't exactly like they were killing him. He said, for me personally, I feel like I did everything I needed to do in the sense of, in the year prior, taking myself off the max to help the team get better.
Which this isn't a lie, by the way.
No, I know.
It's not.
And he goes, for myself, obviously, but to win a championship. So things didn't work out. I wanted to get paid. They weren't talking. So it is what it is. You move on. Everybody's happy. Life is good. And I mean, everybody's looking forward. And I will say also, when they asked him about Maxey after the game, dude was a sweetheart about him. He was just like, he was honestly talking about him like it was his kid. He was just like, I'm so happy for him. Like, their sky is the limit. He's so awesome. It's just like, I don't know. There's not a lot of bad blood. I'm kind of glad that era is over, just because with Harden, you're always like, when is he going to check out and not, you know, like, when is he just like, something's going to go wrong and like, you're just, he's all of a sudden going to start like tanking something. But he obviously helped Embiid. He helped Maxey. He had a pretty good run. He was not like the guy we needed in the playoffs, but now we don't have that guy. So it'll be a really interesting experience to go into a postseason with Maxey and Embiid. But what I want to get to next, a lot of guys who might not be here next year.
Yeah. I'm personally worried about how Maxey is going to perform as the primary ball handler. Like, this is his first postseason with that responsibility. And I think Harden made things so much easier for everybody. And you guys heard me say all last year that James Harden was their most important player. Like, I felt like he had to be Kobe Bryant. I felt like, you know, for times in that postseason last year, he was that. So I don't know I don't know what I'm going to get from Maxey. And it's just, you know, when it comes to the rejection thing, it's like, if anything, Morey rejected him because it seemed like Harden wanted to be here. It, like, from all accounts, he wanted to finish his career in Philadelphia if he could get paid. And he sacrificed a lot. I don't really have any hatred in my heart for James Harden at all. Like, so I didn't quite understand the booze. I mean, I understand what our city is, but it's hard for me to just, because I felt like he would be here. If we had just decided to invest in him, he would be here. I think Morey made the right decision, though.
You watch New York media clips of dudes losing their mind about Saquon coming to the Eagles, that's not how it really was here with Harden being like, I want out. You know, like, it was just kind of I guess this played out exactly the way most people kind of assumed it would.
If anything, it was more relief, right? Because it didn't drag out too long. He got traded on Halloween Day, I believe, right? So the season had just started. Yeah. He got traded on Halloween Day. He wasn't being like a malcontent where, like, the Ben Simmons situation where he was going to practice, not going to practice, showing up, not showing up, getting fined, doing all types of weird nonsense. He just got traded and went about his way, went back home to LA and didn't really make a scene or didn't do anything at practice. Didn't piss off Nick Nurse said good things about him. All the teammates said good things about him. So
it seems to be mostly a Daryl and James thing.
I guess Brooklyn, like, is a different, that was a different way of him going out, but he kind of read the writing on the wall over there and did a couple little things. Same with Houston, where the fat suit, and then he criticized his teammates. He criticized his teammates in that final press conference. Was like, "Yo, you can't win here, dog. Like, I need to get out of here." Whereas in Philly, it was just wasn't that.
I think teams make choice. Go ahead, Reem. I'm sorry to interrupt.
No. You got it.
I was just like, it's been so interesting to watch what's happened with these teams where Harden has been, because every team has its own culture. They have its own management. It has its own trajectory, and, you know, with the exception of Brooklyn, like, those teams have now at this point all recovered. Like, obviously Oklahoma City has gone through their version of the process and are absolutely storming, you know, the Western Conference this season, maybe a year away from being there, but, like, you know, look incredible. Houston has now rebuilt this team with both their high-end draft picks like Jalen and Sengun and Jabari and Cam Whitmore even for a bit there, but also with veterans. Brooklyn's a shambles, but, like, Brooklyn's been a shambles since they made, like, honestly, it's just a joke, like, to me. And, like, I can't believe John Marks is, like, a GM and stuff. And now we're here with Philly. And, like, look, when you look at what the Sixers have on their books for next season, it's pretty easy to see why Daryl did what he did. The Sixers have two dudes under contract, Embiid and B-Ball Paul. And then they will obviously extend Maxey. They have purposely, like, kind of timed Maxey's extension so that they can have, like, the maximum amount of flexibility. They've added Hield and Lowry. I'm going to talk about those guys in a minute. But, like, the Sixers go into next season within a tremendous amount of cap room, an MVP caliber star, an up and coming borderline all NBA player, if you ask me, in Maxey, at least an all-star. So, you know, everything being equal, Philly's a pretty attractive destination for somebody. Who that somebody is, we can get into. Obviously, free agency is sort of weird now because it's like, oh, well, the great free agents, you know what I mean? Like, they're not even getting to their free agency. They're getting traded before free agency. But because of that, the Sixers have some space to absorb both maybe a star player coming towards us, or even maybe take on some crappy contract and wind up being able to get some other assets going in the other direction so that they can maybe replenish their war chest, however they want to do it. So there's a lot of optionality there. I want to talk a little bit about the sort of the post All-Star break team and how you guys have seen these guys perform, because we haven't done this pod in a while. Mm-hmm. The big one for me is Tobias. So obviously Maxey has been 25, 26, sometimes 30 points a game. I think I heard Spike and Mike on the Rights to Ricky Sanchez talking about this today. Like, Nurse is really playing him a lot. You could make the argument that he's got the legs for it. You know, I get it, but it is on one hand, like, Maxi has kept us in the playoff race. On the other hand, like, is he going to be completely zonked by the time we get to the postseason? Will be really interesting to see. But Tobias has been, look, a huge disappointment. I really like him as a dude, but this was the place where it's like, hey, man, if you want to step up and be like the number two, if not the number one option, like, now is the time. And it's just like something happened here.
Yeah. It's frustrating for me just because when you look at, I don't know if you remember at the start of the year, his dad was saying, oh, yeah, Tobias can do more. And every time the Sixers have needed him to do more, if you go back to the last season, Ben Simmons was here when they pretty much de-emphasized Ben Simmons' role as an offensive player and made Tobias the number two. What did he do in that game seven? He did nothing. And then post All-Star break, he's given us nothing. I mean, you're talking about a guy 15 points per game, and it's just like this team has had trouble scoring. He's 31% from the three-point line. Like, it's just very disappointing to see where he's at, and I'm so glad that he's going to be going this year.
I really do like Tobias Harris. I think that it's time for us to see a Sixers without Tobias Harris, like to get like a different roster makeup. I think this is Daryl Morey's opportunity to truly remake this team. I think Harden was one version of that, and now he has like his like blank slate. Okay, like what are your models telling you, and what is Nick Nurse looking for that like really truly fits? And I think in around the margins, he's done a really good job of like throwing out ideas. Like, obviously, like a dude like Buddy should be a true killer on an Embiid Sixers team. Like that two guard who is just deadly from the arc is great. I get why they got Lowry. I get what he brings to the team, and if anything, I think he really improves the Sixers' basketball IQ, and I wish he could be in more end-of-game situations and that this minutes restrictions weren't really in place. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of our younger guys have, like, I don't know, I wouldn't want to say, like, ceilinged out a little bit, but, like, has there been any of, like, the young dudes on the team that have really jumped out at you? Like, the Ricky Councils, like, the... Yeah, Cliff's like, you're like, nah, right?
So to me, I mean, Ricky Council, but then again, it's like none of these young dudes are super promising, or they don't look to me like a role. They don't have a role here in the future. You know what I'm saying? Ricky Council, maybe. I just like his energy, his effort. He could probably do something with that talent. I don't know how old he is. He might be, what, like 21, 20? I'm not exactly sure. I mean, there's something there. Like, there's a spark there. You can tell he wants to hoop. You can tell he wants to be out there. You can tell he has some type of talent, energy, athleticism. He can jump high. Grab rebounds, whatever, make the game a little bit dirty. But as far as being like a rotational player for a championship level team, I don't think that's going to be him. Like, yeah, I feel like once the playoffs come, that's like a five.
Paul Reed can be a rotational player for a championship.
And he has to be. Yeah. Paul Reed has to be at some point, right? But to me, like, Ricky Council is more so of like a 5-minute guy. But you signed Paul Reed last offseason when you matched that contract. Yeah, shout out to Danny Ainge for doing that, by the way.
Thanks, Danny.
Yeah, where you have to match that. But Paul Reed has to be an integral part. Like, and not for nothing, like, I like his effort too. He doesn't wow anybody. He doesn't do anything crazy. But
I like Paul Reed.
He'll play defense. He'll make the game dirty a little bit. He's definitely not scared of nobody. That's why I like Paul. And he listens to leadership too, right? Like, I seen when Pat Bev was here, he was telling Paul Reed, all right, do this on the pick and roll situation. If he does this, you pull up, you hedge it a little bit better, and then I'm gonna drop back, whatever, I'll play to help. And he took that information, and he wasn't resistant about it, none of it. And it looks like Kyle Lowry's kind of doing that same veteran role with Paul Reed on the pick and roll situations, what to do with certain spots, shooting the ball when you feel comfortable with it. He's shooting a three now. Like, if Embiid comes back, Paul Reed is what, 10 minutes a game? What, 10, 15 minutes a game?
Well, he might need a little bit, a couple more minutes than that if they have Embiid on like a unofficial
like a 28, like, 30 minute. So if I'm fine with Paul Reed doing a 15 minute, you know, maybe even longer in a playoff situation game. I'm totally fine with that. I feel like he's going to show up there and he's not going to get embarrassed or outplayed by anybody. I see him go toe-to-toe with Bam just last week. I thought that was pretty solid of him. I saw him banging in the paint with like the dudes on the Knicks a couple weeks ago. Even when Tobias wasn't there, you know, showing up, putting up six shots, Paul Reed is over there jacking up threes. I think he put up like 12, 13 shots. So like, listen, at least you're going to get that effort, man. Like I'm cool with that. If you give an effort and you playing hard and you playing your backup role, which is being muddy and being a big, grabbing rebounds, playing defense, boxing out, whatever, like that's not bad. Like,
yeah,
I can't fault it.
There just hasn't been any kind of like, I think with the exception of Maxi, there has not been a lot of like, whoa, this guy really showed us something in Embiid's absence. Tobias kind of fell off a cliff. Buddy, after a really hot start, just like is kind of like falling down the rotation pecking order, right, Raheem?
Yeah, I mean, without a doubt. One thing I want to say is like, you know, last night I felt like Mo Bamba was like really, really good.
Yeah, but I mean, like,
and
honestly,
I wish, he hasn't been great while he's here, but I mean, I felt like last night was his.
He's been playing well with Lowry too, especially. I thought like him and Lowry seemed to have like, or maybe Lowry's just good at throwing passes to him. I don't know.
Yeah, and I wish he got more minutes last night. I felt like the Clippers, they want you to play small, and the Sixers kind of just decided to play small with them, and I didn't like that. Like, I wish him and B-Ball Paul had played more fourth quarter minutes. I felt like they would have had more rim protection.
Like, let's talk about. Do you feel like Buddy is a player where it's like it's almost impossible to evaluate what he means to the team without seeing him with Embiid?
Yeah, I mean, you hinted on it earlier. You spoke on how Joel Embiid is really great with those screens, and you saw it with JJ Redick when he was here. Like, he's a guy who should be better. And at the end of the day, if you have Joel Embiid out there, it's going to create those open looks for Buddy that he just doesn't have now.
Yeah, I mean, of guys that I would really like to see back, it would be probably. Gotta admit, I really have enjoyed my Nicholas Batum experience, and I just think he's generally like a really savvy basketball player. At an appropriate price, I would be happy to have Lowry end his career here, and be kind of like a coach on the floor, like essentially like a player coach assistant, like gets 20 minutes a game, can sometimes like, you know, maybe if he gets hot or like whatever, like I know that he's basically in the waning years of his career, but anything that raises the IQ level of the basketball team, especially, like I'm really a fan of. After that, is there anybody that you're really like bending over backwards to bring back?
I mean, I think we haven't spoken enough about DeAnthony Melton.
This is another like crucial absence. Like, I don't know what this team would have been like in Embiid's absence if we had had Melton this whole time. I know that sounds crazy, but it's little things like that. It's like Covington's injury too.
Yeah. Like, so we're just missing so much. And Melton has just meant so much to this team. And I just, like, I would like to have him back. He's a guy I definitely want back.
So Melton, you want back. What about Lowry?
I'm always inclined to like kind of go younger.
I feel like with that buyout and him coming, don't you think there was probably like a wink, wink, like you'll be here next season too? Like, you're not gonna have to move three times.
Yeah, I can see that. I think he'll probably be here. I'm not really a campaign guy, so.
I mean, campaign like to me is not that much different than Bamba. It's just like every four or five games, maybe you see something and you're like, hey, you know, I think Cam's averaging like 10 points a game. I can't tell how much Nick Nurse trusts him. Doesn't seem like a ton because he's playing maxi like 45 minutes a game. Let's talk a little bit about the big thing that could happen next season, which is the rumor that sort of popped up over the last couple of days that the Clippers and Paul George might be far apart in their estimations of what kind of contract you should be getting next, and that the Sixers could be whether it's a trade or whatever it would be, a landing spot for PG-13, for Paul George. To me, a huge upgrade over Tobias Harris. So there's one way to look at it. I think is very much in the win now window. So you don't have to worry a lot about like, well, hopefully within the next three seasons, this guy like develops into something. And if you're looking at a team that's basically Embiid, Maxi, and Paul George, and fill out the rest how you will, I think that's like, I mean, is it as good as Boston? Maybe not, but it's pretty good. I would probably put him over the way the Bucks have looked, put him over the Bucks right now.
I would definitely put them over the Bucks. But I mean, you got to remember, Paul George is getting older. He's 33 years old. He'll be 34 this year. So, I mean, he is aging. This is a guy who, I mean, he had a catastrophic injury like 6 years ago, 7 years ago now. But he's still a guy who can just, he can provide the Sixers with what you're looking for, which is a three and D starter. And Tobias Harris has not been
level that starter. Yeah. Yeah. He's definitely a huge step above Toby.
Yeah. You just have to pay for it. Yeah. And I think that's tough. You're paying him. He's probably going to ask for a 4-year max. You're paying him through the age of 38. But right. I mean, you're in win now mode. So if you're in win now mode, this is the guy that you probably want to pick up. I mean, who else is out there as far as like a free agent? You're talking about Siakam. You're talking about maybe Zach LaVine or so. I'd rather have
Paul George.
I would rather have Paul George. I think Zach LaVine, just defensively, he's not giving you anything.
Yeah, I think it's like, look, either accept the fact that, like, you know, Embiid is going to be Embiid, and if he's playing, he's an MVP caliber player, and if he's not, the team's not going to be that great, and try and like almost get younger and more athletic, or like just be like, we got to do everything we can to win a title while Joel Embiid is in his prime, so let's get somebody who's 34, and if we're paying him when he's 38, so be it. I mean, that was why I think everybody was like, I guess you just re-sign Harden, right? Like, yeah, we're going to be paying for the worst years of Harden's career, but for the two that he's still sick, he's going to be playing against with Joel, and like those two guys could be enough to get us over the hump. So I'm pretty pro Paul George in this scenario, because I think he's just a radical upgrade over every other wing we have.
Yeah. Cliff, what do you think of it? Because when I look at it, like, I have trouble believing it's realistic. It almost feels like a leverage play. It just feels like, I have trouble believing that he's going to be a guy who's going to come to Philly as an LA guy.
I was about to say, I think it's just too good, because first of all, the Clippers are finally going to get that arena to where they're not like the eighth option for crypto.com arena. They don't have to play games at like noon anymore. So I think that he's from Cali, he's playing with dudes from Cali. I'm assuming Harden, Russ, and himself are free agents after the season. Obviously, Kawhi, you can tell he's just obviously not going anywhere. Kawhi just, look, I'm a retired Clipper, and I'm going to be good playing for the Clippers as long as they have me. Like, Kawhi just seems like a guy where if he can't play for, like, the Clippers or Lakers, he's just not going to play basketball. Like, that's kind of how I view Kawhi. So, look, at least you know you got Kawhi over there anyway. And plus, like, it's Ballmer, right? Like, do you think Ballmer would actually let him – he would pay whatever – the luxury tax penalties are going to – look, real nasty.
It's going to be insane, dude.
Yeah. So, yeah. But yeah. I think, but Ballmer got the pockets. So, you build in the arena, you need to have an attraction over there. You could have Paul George for another good, I don't know, three years at least? Because what is it? You said he's 34 in a couple. I think he's 34.
Like, he's 34 on May 2nd.
Okay. Yeah. So, he's 34 on May 2nd, you know, about a month and a half or so. So, I mean, listen, you got to fork that up. And on top of that, like, that salary is going to hamper you down again. So you got to pay Maxey. Like, to me, I think it would just make more sense to just, all right, let Maxey, you know, be the point guard, be the playmaker, whatever, have Embiid, and then just re-sign guys like Buddy, bring back Kyle Lowry, look at, like, you know, a Caleb Martin, different wing players that are going to be free agents in the league, or make a trade for a guy who's on his final year of his contract and figure it out from there. I think building the team that way, like, more depth instead of just, like, a top-heavy roster to where you see everything crater once one guy falls, I think that makes the most sense for the Sixers. Like, I feel like that's the best approach for any NBA team, really. Like, you kind of see it with Phoenix, where I don't know if Devin Booker's playing one night. I don't know if Bradley Beal's playing one night. I don't know if Kevin Durant – well, KD's been fairly consistent this year, but I don't know if, like, all three of them are going to play all together every single night. And then it just doesn't look good.
It looks disjointed. When one of them,
they're like the worst fourth quarter team in the NBA. It doesn't look good. They're very top heavy. They have to rely on guys like Grayson Allen and Saben Lee in crunch time, because
Grayson Allen's been good this year.
By the way, he has, but he's been really good this year from three. He's been killing it from three. But, like, you know, maybe you bring back a Oubre who can look way better, who looked even better with Embiid earlier this season instead of being like the main guy. So
yeah, I mean, the version of the Sixers that came out there at the beginning part of the season was basically like, I had no complaints. Like, honestly, I was just like, this team is real cool. I like these dudes. I like all this. Like, I think there's a lot of smarts on this team. I think these guys are crafty and good. And I was really excited for this whole like second half of the season, because I was like, Embiid's like walking away with MVP, you know, like, and I think that he was actually doing it in a way which felt sustainable, rather than like, oh, this dude is stat padding, or this guy's staying in games when we're up 12 and doesn't necessarily need to be in there, but he wants to get his numbers. I thought Embiid was having like just like a perfectly awesome season. So to me, there's not a lot of danger. We can't run it back just because none of these guys are on the books. So it's weird.
And then, like, when you said, the Melton thing too. So like that, the road coat, like, Rocco's been out since, I feel like he's been out since he's got here.
I think since that, like, the Saric and Covington and Ben Simmons era, the Sixers culture has changed over every 18 months. Like, we've basically like rebuilt the team around Embiid every season and a half or two. So I'm pretty used to it, but I'm also like, I don't even know what to say, because it's hard for me to imagine like getting excited about like Caleb Martin and a bunch of other dudes like around these guys. Like, I'm sure it'll happen. I'm sure I'll get into it. If you told me Batum and Covington are going to be there, I wouldn't have gotten excited last year. And I was pretty into them in the beginning of the season. So anything is possible. It's just such a strange way of going about running an NBA franchise, especially when you look around and you see teams like Denver or even Oklahoma having this success, because there's obviously this core that they've been developing and building around and adding to and tweaking and really drafting intelligently, which is something the Sixers have not really been doing outside of Maxi. It's like, I would love a Christian Braun on like Brown on like the Sixers.
Like a Payne Watson, right?
Dudes like that. Like, I'd love some of these dudes, and like, we just don't really bring them in. And because we don't have a young like depth layer on the Sixers, it's just always going to be rolling the dice with dudes who are like, who are veteran free agents.
Yeah. I think you just, I mean, it's just tough to get the guys like that we truly, like a guy like a Bruce Brown. Like, that's a guy who's an impact player who you bring in, and who the Nuggets had, they bring in for cheap, or just like a Caleb Martin, or just, you know, guys like that. It's just, it's, those are the diamonds
Malik
in the rough
Monk
that you just,
or whatever.
Yeah, Malik Monk. You got to find those diamonds in the rough, and they're tough to find. Like, I mean, you're going to miss on a lot of those guys when you,
you could see there's an argument that to be made that we are doing for Oubre what the Kings did for Malik Monk, right? Like, Malik came off of like a Lakers season, got some exposure, and has really found his lane in the NBA as like a microwave scorer off the bench who can also start in the absence of a couple of guys and play in crunch time and stuff like that. But
then
just,
it's frustrating. The thing that's frustrating for me is like, you have a guy like Isaiah Joe who was in our system.
Dude, don't even say the name. Don't even say the name, because I watched that dunk 42 times and I was like, if this guy was still on the Sixers, I would have gotten his name tattooed on my face if he had just done that. Like, it would have been crazy.
Like, that's a guy who should be here and he would be an impact player for us, but we...
Yeah, Mikal Bridges should be here too. Come on.
Listen, it's safe to say that Sixers have failed with a bunch of different names that have came through the franchise here, and we sit here and we sulk about it every... So a couple months, and they bring back the Jimmy Butlers of the world and Tobias Harris over me, and like that contract just holding us back for so long. Like, think about that. Like,
yeah, a player Toby that cost like, us Jimmy Butler and Mikal Bridges.
Yeah, like, think about that. Yeah. Like, a player like Tobias, who some games will take like 10, 11 shots. I saw he took like 6 shots in one of the losses, and it's like, yo, that's $40 million that you can't even move because no one wants that, right? Yeah. And then on top of that, you're not getting like the production. Like,
but I can't imagine, honestly, I got to say, I was thinking about this the other day about how many different people they've asked Tobias to be, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, that's got to be hard. It's like, yeah, you're the fourth option when everything is going right, but when everything is going wrong, we need you to be Kobe. You know, it's like,
yeah,
that's got to be hard. Like, there's not a lot of players that have to do stuff like that. Like, Maxi, it's been a much more natural progression. He's taken advantage of every opportunity he's gotten, and now he's kind of become this effervescent fan favorite, like Philly favorite. Like, he's arguably like kind of like becoming like the most popular Sixer. I know it's Embiid, but like people love Maxi.
I'd argue Maxi might be the most popular Sixer. And I feel so like Embiid still has like a tumultuous type of relationship with the
like
fans,
a little
of the
bit
city
of a
because,
moodiness to it. Yeah.
Yeah,
so
because
Maxi
like,
is just like, dudes are just like, I love Maxi. I have a Maxi jersey.
And not for nothing, but, like, you got to remember, he's like a 20-something overall pick. So it's like the expectation wasn't for him to be all NBA, all-star, and he's just exceeded every expectation with a smile on his face. Never see him complain. He doesn't do the diva stuff.
But something about Maxey's role has allowed him to kind of flip between being the number one option when Embiid is out to being the number three option when Harden was here to be sometimes number four. Tobias has had to go from being like, hey, man, stand in the corner. Or... hey man, like the offense needs to run through you because everybody's hurt, and that's got to be complicated. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
to go from being Grayson Allen to being KD on any given night is hard.
And I've always given Tobias credit for that because he was always obviously overqualified for the position that he came in when he initially came with the Sixers. I mean, this guy was behind Jimmy Butler, Ben Simmons, and Joel Embiid, and like he's navigated all of these roles, but at some point you can't have your father come out complaining you can do more. And then anytime we demand more from you, you slip up. Like, what was he, 7-24 in that game 7? I hope, like, people, like, and I'm always going to say this, people always blame Ben Simmons for not dunking the ball, but Tobias was the worst player in that game to me. And I still hold him accountable for us losing that game 7 against the Hawks. So at the end,
just incredible vibes going into the play-in tournament from Raheem's, like, invoking the Hawks series. We're talking about whether or not, Isaiah Joe is a Sixers legend in the making. Yeah.
I think y'all downplayed like the Heat lurking in that play-in tournament too. So it's like the Heat are a game and a half back from the Pacers. The Sixers are a game and a half back.
Yo, but like, come on, Raheem, you're a gambler, man. Like, the Heat have to roll fucking snake eyes one of these times, right? Like, I mean, how often can they just be like, we're playing possum and the possum wakes up, like, right?
I thought it was last year. I had money on the Bulls to win that game, and they had them, and then I just don't know what happened. But I, like, at this point, I'm done counting out the Heat, and with the way the Pacers are playing.
Yeah, I know. And Haliburton,
I honestly think that we could end up facing the Pacers in the play-in game. Like,
honestly, I hope so. I just don't want to see
that happens. I think that has a bigger shot of happening, and I think the Sixers are going to end up winning that 7-8 game.
Okay.
Because I think the Pacers are cooked. Like, Tyrese Haliburton, like, he's been playing hurt just because he wants to get that 65 game.
I don't blame him.
And I just, they're not playing well at all.
There's a lot of money attached to that reward, so I get it from his perspective of going out there playing hurt, but yeah, it's been a free fall for him. You could tell he's just been playing hurt on the ham. I think it's been a hamstring injury, at least.
He hurt his hamstring, came back a little too early, probably, and now it's been gamey.
Like, now that I'm really thinking about it, with the way that the Pacers are slipping, I almost think you almost have to be a little bit excited about the Sixers championship equity. I know it sounds crazy.
Yeah, like, just, I mean, like, I guess so. Yeah. I mean, honestly, I'm ready to get hurt again because I'd rather almost be like the Cinderella, nobody believes in us, and Embiid's back. Holy shit, the Sixers coming out of the play-in, than I would be the second or third seed and have some weird 7-game second round series and just be like, I can't believe this is happening again. Like, we almost have like nothing to lose in the way that this is shaping up. As long as we don't lose to the Heat in the play-in.
Like, I look at it like this. The Pacers slipped to 7. Sixers win the 7-8 game. You're taking on a Milwaukee Bucks team who can't stop anybody. And you got a reunion with Doc. That's the story.
I mean, that would be great for content. We would have to go like 5 days a week.
Like, that's the story right there. Like, it could play out. If we're the AFC, we're not beating Boston. That's just not happening.
I'm not even entertaining the idea. It's not. But like, it's, oh, like, you know, you never know. We could spread them out. And it's like, we ain't doing anything to those guys.
But I think there's some optimism if they could win that 7-8 game and take on Milwaukee. I think
we need Boston to have like a full on they forgot to melt the Bruins ice and the starting five all twisted their ankles on like the same night kind of situation. And we'd probably still lose to like Peyton Pritchard. You know, it would be like some like Sam Hauser, Peyton Pritchard heat check night. We'd still lose. Any Phillies thoughts? You know, like, I'm it's kind of interesting to be heading into this season because speaking of teams that like tell you who they are in the playoffs, like to me, it's like you can get away with not really even paying attention to the Phils until August, and then they go and rip off like a bunch of wins and fly into the playoffs and just start yamming on dudes. And I, you know, the opening day was postponed today. I was supposed to play the Braves, but largely the same team coming back, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty much the same team, but I think if there's any encouraging signs is that Bryce Harper was out almost, you know, midway through the year. And then Trey Turner coming over from the yeah. Dodgers, he wasn't himself at all for like the first half of the year. Like he was horrible. He was getting booed. And then halfway through the year, he became the guy.
That's because the Philadelphia fans stood up for him and just gave him rounds of like standing ovations every time he got like a walk.
And you saw the same thing happen with Castellanos his first year in Philly. So we're essentially getting Bryce Harper and Trey Turner for a whole season now, as opposed to half the season. So you look at a guy like Trey Turner, this guy stole 30 bases last year, and he was garbage for half of the year. So I think you could pencil him in for another 30 stolen bases. Like if any guy's making bets, you can take Trey Turner over 27 and a half stolen bases this year. I think when you add those to the mix, and you gotta consider that Bryce Harper didn't have his power until towards the end of the year. He had like three home runs at one point. So that's the encouraging thing. And we all know we have one of the best bullpens in the league. Like you look at the bullpen, you got the starting rotation is Aaron Nola,
Zach Wheeler,
Ranger Suarez has been a decent third guy. A lot of people are high on Christopher Sanchez. He could be the fourth guy. That bullpen is just, it's great. Dominguez, Soto, Hoffman, Strom. Like, I just think we're in good position to be a wild card team.
Yeah, man.
Because the Braves are a juggernaut. Because
it's like, let's have like a little bit of a divisional race. How about that? This season. Like,
yeah.
Like, just like a mini one. You know, maybe not spotting the Braves like a 20-game lead before July 4th or whatever. Guys, it was great to see you. Shield's been off this week, but he'll be back. And I'm sure we'll be back with some more Sixers talk as we get into this home stretch and especially into the play-in situation. 9 more games to go. Joel Embiid's return seems to be imminent if you base it off of social media posts by the Sixers team account. Sixers have the Cavs on Thursday night. That would be a cool comeback for Joel. I think Donovan Mitchell is supposed to be coming back soon too, so we might see a much like higher star wattage in that game than we expected. But I can't wait to see the big man back on the floor, and it was great to see both of you guys here on the Ringers Philly special. Thanks to Cliff for producing. Thanks to Raheem, as always. And you can expect to hear Sheil and Ben and all of us soon. Take care, guys.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. FanDuel is offering online sports wagering in Kansas under an agreement with Kansas Star Casino, LLC. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit FanDuel.com/RG in Colorado, Iowa, Michigan, New Jersey, North Carolina, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Illinois, Kentucky, Tennessee, Virginia, and Vermont. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP or text NEXTSTEP to 53342 in Arizona, 1-888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org/chat in Connecticut, 1-800-9-WITH-IT in Indiana, 1-800-522-4700 or visit ksgamblinghelp.com in Kansas, 1-877-770-STOP in Louisiana, visit mdgamblinghelp.org in Maryland, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net in West Virginia, or call 1-800-522-4700 in Wyoming. Hope is here. Visit gamblinghelplinema.org or call 800-327-5050 for 24/7 support in Massachusetts, or call 1-877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY in New York.
This episode is brought to you by State Farm. You might say all kinds of stuff when things go wrong, but these are the words you really need to remember. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. They've got options to fit your unique insurance needs, meaning you can talk to your agent to choose the coverage you need, have coverage options to protect the things you value most, File a claim right on the State Farm mobile app and even reach a real person when you need to talk to someone. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.